And welcome everybody on YouTube as we start overtime. Kyle, you make it okay?
I made it.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of. Yeah, I'll say okay.
Is this working? Because I don't see any numbers on here. Rob Gila, you see what I'm seeing?
We are. Whoa. We are.
What's going on?
We are live. We're live. We're good. We have 19 people so far.
I don't see that. I don't see anything. Wow.
I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, okay. No, it scrolled off the screen. I don't know why it did that. Okay. That's fine. I thought it was the Indian court that was getting to us. Okay, fine. I did just check the fax machine. No legal threats yet. So we'll keep an eye on that.
It's because Rob's wearing that Appin T-shirt that I think is...
Yeah, let's talk about
that's
that.
That's why they're not mad.
Rob, yeah, people...
No, I think you should do it so that it just reads Appin. I think that's
better. Yeah, people on the radio can't see this, obviously, but we see it, and... It, you know, for a while during the show, it says Appin right there, the company we're talking about, except it's part of a bigger word. Is that what we're to understand?
Yes, I'm wearing a T-shirt that says Napping Enthusiast, and it's got a nice picture of a cartoon pillow there with a smiling face on it. But I'm also wearing a button-down shirt over this T-shirt, and so comment was made during the show in our internal chat that it looked like I had chosen to wear an Appin T-shirt. And I don't own an Appin T-shirt, but now given this story we're talking about, I kind of want one. Is that wrong?
Well, I think when you get threatened by massive companies, it's traditional for them to send you a T-shirt at the end.
An Indian court might order you to take that T-shirt off if you wear it.
Wow. Okay, David Green obviously is joining us from EFF. Cooper, are you with us as well?
Yes, I am still here.
Great. Thank you both so much for being a part of it. Gila, you had something. Go ahead.
Actually, I do have a clarifying question. If Cooper is with us, are we going to be able to take phone calls?
Well, he's on the phone, so no.
I was not sure how he was connected to us.
But what you're doing, you're conveying messages from people who are listening to us right now. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing, except we just maybe don't get rebel this week.
100%. So just so everybody in the chat is aware, we cannot take phone calls tonight. So please stick in the chat. Okay. I also want to clarify something else. Just to clear a few things up. A reminder that while the chat exists before the show starts, we are not monitoring it before we start on overtime. No one is blocking you from chatting. No one is afraid of you chatting. Sometimes your moderator gets annoyed. That's all.
I don't know what's going on here.
I want to remind you of that.
This is why I stay away from the chat. I just do the radio. And yeah, okay, fine. Whatever drama is happening out there, yeah.
And also, again, just to the folks who are chatting, we are going to stick with putting question in brackets, especially this week when we can't take phone calls. And if you want to be part of the conversation, please tag your question for us on air. And Rebel, this is your warning.
Wait, we have to warn Rebel in the chat as well as on the phone? Can't we just not read what is said if we don't like it?
No, we absolutely can, but if Rebel's going to continue to pretend to be 9X, we're banning him from the chat for the week.
Okay. All right. And you say questions have to be in brackets? That's what
no, it, that will just make it easier for us to see.
Okay.
If you want your question to be on the air, please.
But people won't be penalized if they don't do that, right?
They will not be penalized, but we will definitely know if your question is for the panel if you preface it with questions.
Because, you know, online, I don't do a lot online as far as interaction, but, I'm aware of all kinds of rules that exist for one reason or another on certain social boards where, you know, if you don't phrase something in a particular way, you get thrown out. And it just seems so harmless. Like, you know, you just don't phrase a question in a particular manner. And it's just really a little weird. I see that on Facebook a lot in different places and, But we try to be fairly loose here, right? We try to be as carefree as possible, but some people bring that with them, and we don't really have the patience for it. All right. So anyway, let's get back to this incredible story because, you know, I only heard about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, again, the folks at EFF, I don't know what we would do if they weren't there to make this into some form of sanity. But do you guys feel like this is getting worse? This kind of thing is becoming more prevalent with massive media companies and online entities like controlling everything. Are individuals going to be suffering more?
You know, it's I hope it's not getting worse. It's been a pretty steady problem. And this is an especially brazen example because they're actually been sending things to some fairly high profile news outlets. A lot of times things like this happen completely under the radar due to smaller outlets. It's not one of the reasons that this was a bit unusual is because it was actually they chose to try and, you know, flaunt this order around to, you know, to sort of to real publications that had a lot of success take them down. So I don't know that it's a bigger problem that has to, but that in no way, by saying that, I don't want to say that it's not like a bad problem. Like it's been sort of a steady problem. And really since internet publication went international, you know, people pretty quickly realized that, you know, they had sort of the world's courts to try and, you know, find a good one to get some order they thought might be useful for them.
Yeah. And I mean, this also, I think I'll say that kind of relates here is that this, you know, cyber mercenary organizations, you know, and engaging in the activities that Appen is accused of engaging in, right? And that there's good evidence that they have engaged in, historically, right? But these sorts of companies really do a lot of damage to free expression and free speech, right? Like they go after a lot of activists, right? A lot of journalists, a lot of human rights defenders, and really try to, you know, squash a lot of stories, right? There's the sort of famous example of Ronan Farrow, right, and the sort of, you know, cyber mercenary spy organization Black Cube that was hired to go after him to catch and kill his story about Harvey Weinstein, right? And so, like, and that's obviously a different organization, but that is sort of the MO of these organizations, right? They're really, really dangerous for free speech, really dangerous for free expression. And it sort of gets it, you know, we have this danger in this case on free expression on both ends, right? You're at risk, your freedom of speech is at risk just by these guys existing, right? But your freedom of speech is also at risk once you've written the story about them, right? And so they're sort of coming at it from both sides. And that's what I think is really dangerous here.
That's like, Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I do think there may be some precedent here too for these bad guys, the Appen Tech Center clowns, actually coming after podcasts as well that have talked about this particular issue, because I think that the podcast the Behind the Bastards had talked about this particular story. And then they received a takedown, and I think that whatever their podcast producer was or whatever it is actually removed the content. So I think it's quite possible that if the lawyers for these clowns get wind of the fact that we had discussed this at length during a session of live radio on WBAI that then gets distributed as a podcast, and then we talked about it live on YouTube, that we may very well be on the receiving end of takedown notice.
And don't forget, it's going to be in the magazine, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we're going to make a motion picture about it and have a Broadway show. So we're trying to cover all bases here. Come get
that's
us.
That's right. Well, we could have Barbara Streisand herself maybe star in the show. That would bring it really full circle. There's a lot of full circles tonight happening on the show.
We do take it seriously, though, so don't let it be said that we're making a mockery of this, because there's nothing more serious than freedom of speech. It's hugely important, needs to be defended at every level. And Kyle, I think you've got something.
Well, I just am curious, like, what else is on the horizon, and broadly, like, why aren't they as fearful of us, of the publications? And I think I want to know in the sort of light of good faith actors and sort of, as Alex pointed out, this bad faith world that maybe institutions that are law-abiding and just trying to operate, they don't necessarily have the sort of cadre of tools and repercussions and things they can draw upon because they're not acting in the same world or landscape. And I'm wondering, is that something that is a hindrance?
Does anybody want to take that? Because I was actually losing a little bit of the connection towards the end there, so I'm sorry.
Anyone?
David, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I and Kyle, let me know if I answer your question. There's two things going on here. One, they're sort of the Association of Appen Training Centers, I think, just trying to get as much out of this Indian corridor as they possibly can, and I think they probably run up against the limit of it. and that's one of the reasons we really wanted to respond to them and then make our response public, was so that, you know, others who would get this would realize that it was, they were misrepresenting the import of the court order. The other thing that's going on, I think, is much scarier for people, and I think is probably what motivated iHeartRadio to take down the Behind the Bastards episodes, was that when you get the letter from Kare's U.S. lawyers, a law firm called Claire Locke, which is one of the sort of preeminent defamation plaintiffs lawyers, when you get the letter from them saying we're going to sue you in U.S. courts, that's a completely different threat model than someone saying, oh, there's some foreign court that you'll probably never go to that, like, is mad at you, right? And so that's a completely different threat model. And I did not hear the Behind the Bastards podcast, so I don't. But that's just something that's a person who's very wealthy, who has U.S. lawyers, who is at least representing, and he's prepared to sue in U.S. courts. So that's a much more serious threat for somebody for someone to consider. And I think it's probably there's a bit difference, between sort of talking about the Reuters reporting about Appen and then how this Association of Online Appen Training Centers responded to it, and then I think who've really sort of found themselves facing this serious threat, and people have really sort of delved into facts about Kare himself, and they tend to be getting those letters saying, well, we'll see you in U.S. courts.
Wow, yeah, and I think it's just fascinating. I mean, mostly because there seems to be there's a lot of playfulness in how much money and investment they're willing to make in protecting their speech and squelching and otherwise, putting down other speech. And I just feel perhaps is this underfunded in other words, because I don't feel we're as playful enough with throwing around the kind of legal stationery and other big scary things that we're supposed to cow to.
I like your use of the word playful.
It is. It's really gross, actually. I think it's a form of conspicuous consumption that our country and sort of transnationalism itself is breeding. And, I mean, I want to know, what is the, what measure of fuck you in money and legal prowess will it take to put fear in them.
And we're on the podcast now, so we can say that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what will put fear into these people, because they seem to have some kind of bizarre motivation here in terms of just taking down this information. But I think there's a danger here, too. It goes back to what Cooper and I were rapping about a bit during the main show, which is what we're talking about here is a company that it seems to be the successor to a massive threat actor that has targeted thousands of individuals and companies around the globe for political purposes, espionage, theft of trade secrets. I mean, all kinds of really insane, terrible things, right? I mean, this is what the reporting has really borne out and what the threat intelligence shows. You know, it really demonstrates. But if we can't talk about that company, we can't talk about how we got to this point where we are talking about that company, then that's going to prevent us from sharing intelligence from between entities that are going to be targeted, between governments, between institutions. And that's an extraordinarily dangerous world to be a part of at this point, when we can't share things like, you know, the tactics, techniques, and procedures of a threat actor because of an Indian court order that has been misinterpreted and manipulated and passed around the world as if this is some kind of global takedown order. It's totally nuts. It's absolutely insane. It's dangerous, and it shouldn't be tolerated.
It also kind of reminds me in a bizarre way of Disney movies that have to be watered down for Chinese audiences because you don't want to offend the Chinese government, because that's a huge audience. So movies that are made by Disney actually are affected by totalitarian regimes on the other side of the world. So this global control of how we say certain things and what we talk about and what we don't, it seems to be getting worse year by year.
Well, and diminishing the brand in any way, pointing out, it becomes leverage in associating them with their criminal and other activity, not the activity that they want you to associate with their brand that they're trying to protect. And I just think that they've got you if you're the only one and you're running scared, and in actuality, the 10 other entities copying them are the landscape that you should be kind of measuring them as a threat. Like, it's not just one entity. We should be sick of this happening over and over again in all regards. And I think it is like the reporting being silenced takes away the ability for the public to associate their bad faith actions, not the actions of their what this front claims to be. And I just want to know, will Appen continue to, will they be trading in this? Are they going to keep trying to trade in this as long as we don't report on it? Because that's kind of what it seems like.
Yeah, it's a good question. I hope not, but they did go ahead and, you know, sue the New Yorker. Again, that wasn't as successful, at least hasn't been as successful so far. I think the point you're making is really, that this is an especially important topic, you know, for people to be able to report about, and you know, the use of spyware and hacking technologies against human rights activists and really everybody, is a really, you know, is something that really needs reporting, and we certainly don't want that generally to be inhibited because one company is now filing lawsuits. I remain hopeful that Appen will be a little quieter now after the Indian court, you know, wouldn't take the action they wanted against the New Yorker, and I hope our email to them as well. And so I hope Appen will be a little quieter. It doesn't seem like for those who've reported on CARE in particular, again, they seem to be still quite active trying to threaten U.S. legal action.
If I'm interpreting things correctly, I believe Cooper Quinton has joined us on Skype and has left us on the phone. Is that correct?
Yes, I have, and that's the mysterious busy signal everybody heard.
Which means we can take phone calls, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. But please keep it on topic. What do you mean? We'll talk about other issues in the hacker world or technical issues at a different time. But right now we're talking about this. Gila, go ahead.
Do have an interesting point from the chat that I just wanted to bump up to the main conversation. From our friend Johnny Fusion, who says, I can't help but make the connection to the Julian Assange prosecution of how one country's laws are being applied anywhere in the world to people not in or a national of that country. It's not a question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a timely comparison to make, given that, you know, today was Assange's last chance to challenge his extradition to the U.S.
And was there a decision made, or is that coming soon?
Not as far as I know. I don't think they expect a decision today.
Okay.
No decision. So far as I've heard either, but yeah.
We might as well talk about this for a second, because it is what we would have been talking about were we not talking about this week, and we're not on next week. How do we think this is going to go? Do we think it's going to be rubber stamped and he's going to be extradited to the U.S.? Is that the general consensus? Not what we want, what we expect to happen.
Well, yeah, you want to go first, David?
Good. No, go ahead, Alex. You go.
Well, I've written a lot about this. I've published two CNN opinion pieces on this, and I have some fairly pointed views on it. I think there's a big difference between the first set of indictments that were brought, or rather, the first criminal charges that were unsealed against Assange in 2019, and then the superseding indictment that added an additional 17 charges to Assange that all related to the Espionage Act. Now, the first charge that was brought against Assange, and I wrote about this on CNN, I said, wow, this was a really narrowly tailored indictment here. It literally just has to do with essentially what would be colloquially known as a hacking charge, right? A CFAA charge, a conspiracy charge, and it relates to cracking a DoD password. And the issue was that Assange had apparently crossed the line from, according to the government, crossed the line from becoming from being an investigative journalist to becoming part of a criminal conspiracy when he offered assistance to Chelsea Manning to crack a hash password, to essentially use something like a rainbow table to reverse the hash of a password and then access a federally protected computer system. And if he did do that, then arguably, you know, that could be an act in furtherance of a criminal conspiracy. And that was very narrowly drawn, and it was apolitical, and it didn't really have a lot of implications to journalism more broadly. Now, the superseding indictment that came out a couple of months later was crazy. And I wrote another article on CNN about this, about why it was legally idiotic but politically shrewd to bring those superseding indictments against Assange, because under the U.S.-UK extradition treaty, the U.K. will not extradite to the United States anybody who is charged with a quote-unquote political offense. And by criminalizing the manner in which journalists talk with sources and report on national security information, and adding a slew of charges under the Espionage Act that were wholesale rejected during the Obama administration, the Trump administration, I argued in my article, all but intended to preclude or prevent Assange from being extradited to the United States. And that was because I argued again, this is my opinion, that Assange would have been tried in the United States during 2020. Which was an election cycle. And the last thing the Trump administration would want would be Assange bringing to the attention of the world the fact that WikiLeaks had direct connections with the Trump campaign during the 2016 election, after he just got through the whole Mueller bit. So I think it was very, very, very politically shrewd for them to make this into a wildly contested issue that would prevent Assange from being brought back to the United States during 2020. Now, unfortunately, we have the Biden administration, which has maintained the same slew of charges against Assange, the same charges under the espionage, the same things that the journalists around the world have been crying and bemoaning about, because it's anathema to the First Amendment. It could be destructive of journalistic integrity. It could wholesale destroy how journalists work on national security-related matters and make their job into something akin to a criminal enterprise. So the fact that the Biden administration hasn't withdrawn these charges against Assange, I think, is really disappointing. And there was actually a bipartisan group of senators, and the senators, members of the House, I think it was, so congressmen and women, a couple of months ago, that actually, I think 16 or 17 of them, that called on the Biden administration to withdraw all the charges. Now, I personally believe that the Biden administration should withdraw all of the Espionage Act charges, but I think that they should have the discretion to keep the single, quote-unquote, hacking charge about whether or not Assange crossed the line into engaging in a criminal conspiracy. I think that one would still be valid, but I think the others should fall away, because they're very destructive of First Amendment principles, and they don't comport with our American ideals or values. So that's my long way of describing the whole fiasco.
Well, yeah, you described the whole fiasco, but what I asked was, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, what I think is going to happen is, I think he will be extradited and the charges will stand. And I hope and pray that the Biden administration comes to its senses and we have a more sane and a more rational Department of Justice than we did under the Trump administration, and that these charges will fall away. At least some of them should fall away.
Now,
because he's facing 175 years in prison,
yeah,
if he's convicted on all of these, which is insane.
Yeah, it is insane. And honestly, you know, if you hate Julian Assange with every fiber of your being, I still think you would reach the conclusion that he has suffered enough up to this point, and the whole thing has just gone on way too long. But if he were to be extradited to the U.S., Alex or David or Cooper, how do you see that playing out? Where is it likely that the trial will be held? What kind of how will that be something that there'll be crowds of people outside? Will there be representation from various organizations? What do you envision?
Yeah, I don't think the UK court, High Court, will stop the extradition. I really hope I'm wrong. And I also agree with that. I really hope that when he does get extradited, that they will not pursue the Espionage Act charges, because, again, this will really, there's been this sort of unspoken agreement that the Espionage Act will not be used against journalistic activity, and so this would break that, and I'm scared about, again, even if you don't care about Assange personally, I mean, I think I'll be scared about where that would go. Originally, the UK courts had said he would not be extradited because they feared that his incarceration in the US would be tantamount to torture in violation of UK law, and they only changed that decision when the U.S. assured that he would be held like in a humane, non-tortury way. I think there'll be an order for him to be physically extradited. I think whether he actually is or not actually might depend on his health, which is reportedly extremely poor right now. I don't know that he's actually, according to what his family and supporters have been saying, I don't know that he's actually competent to stand trial at the moment, because his mental health and physical health have both suffered. So, but if something does go forward, I imagine that it will be pursued in courts in D.C., because that's where the charges were filed. But again, I think there's a lot of questions about whether he can be physically moved without endangering his health, and whether he's going to be mentally competent to defend the charges.
If this were to happen, what kind of time frame are we looking at?
I don't know. I might ask Alex that question.
I think it would probably take a little while. I think the David, I think the indictments were filed in Virginia, so it might be Eastern or Northern District of Virginia. So probably right around D.C. areas where they would occur. But I mean, I imagine extradition wouldn't happen overnight. There'd be arrangements for this, and then there'd be a massive amount of motions. Counsel would appear in the criminal case. There'd be, you know, it would be like any trial, right? And I mean, there would be discovery amongst the parties. There'd be motion practice, motions in limine. There'd be exclusionary orders. I would say it would probably be the end of the year, maybe possibly just ahead of the election before things started to really heat up. And that would be if this was moving really quickly. I would guess it would probably be 2025, though, by the time that Assange would stand trial.
And if it goes the other way, if they deny extradition, what happens then?
And he stays in the United Kingdom, and there's charges pending against him in the United States, and he's just, you know, stuck over there in the UK. I don't know what the UK courts will do with him in terms of whether he would remain in custody, though. That I'm not entirely sure. We need somebody from, I always forget the name of the UK equivalent of, like, the EFF over there. What is that? We've had them on a couple of times, too, but
there's a few good folks doing the work over there. But, yeah, I think he actually might be released, but if he would travel to a different country, he could face extradition all over.
Yeah.
And again, apparently, you know, for what his family has said, he's not well. I didn't mean to cut Rob off there. I see him raising his hand.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, I just wanted to mention, David, I know you have to take off in a minute, but are there any final things that you'd like to say about, like, where people can find what you're doing or what you're up to?
Yeah, well, everything I'm doing will be on the EFF website. So, you know, always check EFF.org to look, not this work that I'm doing, but my wonderful colleagues are doing as well. And when I sign off of here, we just filed a brief today, and I'll have to post something on our blog about that. So you might get some very current news about some of the stuff that I'm doing.
And is there any contact info you want to give out?
Just, you know, everything is at EFF.org. If you want to contact me personally, you can do it. You can, my email and kind of way to get to me is available through the website.
Okay. David, if you're leaving now, thank you so much for joining us and for everything that you do over at EFF. And it's always a pleasure having you on. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. Kyle, have we gotten any calls or... I haven't heard the phone ringing, so sometimes the ringer is off, but...
No.
Okay. Sorry, your mic was not here. Say that again.
What's new? No.
Okay. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. If there's anything you wish to add to the conversation, feel free to give us a call.
Well, you know, before and earlier weeks, we've always said people shouldn't be calling until we give out the phone number. So it's not surprising that we didn't receive any calls until we gave out the phone number, I think. That's my guess as to what's happening here.
Alex, I actually have a question for you. So And then this is Cooper from EFF for all those in listening land. I'm still on, by the way. I have not left. The thing that upset me the most, and I think the thing that relates the most, or another thing that relates between the Assange trial and then the goings on with Appen and Kare, is that it's been used as a cudgel to bring in other people, you know, even loosely associated with Assange, right? And Chelsea was sent back to prison for a number of years, right? Jeremy Hammond had his sentence extended, both for, you know, refusing to participate in the trial that was held against The grand jury, thank you. The grand jury that was held against Assange here in the U.S. And I mean, I guess my, you know, that's my biggest worry is that, you know, if Assange is extradited to the U.S., that will, you know, those trials will again be used as a cudgel to go after everybody else, you know, that has ever been even, tangentially associated with him in the U.S. Do you think that that's a possibility? Is that something I should be worried about for my friends or?
You know, I think it's always a possibility that they could be investigating something else or something anew. But in all likelihood, those grand jury investigations have already happened. There could be some new superseding indictment where people are expected to testify to the grand jury about their interactions with Assange or something like that. But I think they've hit him with all that they're going to hit him with now, so far. I mean, I can't be 100% sure. But it's such a great point you bring up, though, Cooper, because the cascading effect of these charges isn't something that's very often addressed. And it does really trickle down to everybody that was around them. And those people's communications can be subpoenaed. They can be expected to testify. It can be a very stressful and time-consuming as well endeavor to try to have to deal with this type of thing going on, and it prevents people within that orbit, within that ecosystem, from continuing to do what they were doing, which was publishing facts, being journalists, getting data, acquiring data. You know, this could very easily have a chilling effect on WikiLeaks and its progeny and a lot of the important types of organizations that exist out there, again, like distributed denial of secrets, that are getting out the facts. And again, I think it's so important that we support those types of organizations now as well, because we live in this post-truth, deep fake nonsense dystopia now, where it's really, really hard to figure out what the hell is truth and what is untruth, what's false, right? And to have something like a WikiLeaks or a distributed denial of secrets that's a repository of documents and facts that one can review is going to be extraordinarily important. And I don't think we even understand the importance of that just yet. And then to bring it back again, another full circle here is that with the Appen case here, my understanding too is that they even went so far as to request documents being removed from the Internet Archive, and I think that they had actually complied. So having facts exists,
they were successful in that.
So it is. It's really scary stuff.
Go ahead, Kyle.
So I think what one outcome we might see is that the UK actually departs from the pressure campaign from the US. And I say that because I think there's been sort of a wave of discontent with larger bodies. You saw that with the Brexit resistance to that and other – now I know security agreements and the current state of affairs in the world might dictate all kinds of cooperation. But where there is some sort of check, especially in journalism – where else would someone take asylum or refuge from the reach of an entity as powerful as the U.S.? And it just dawns on me that, like, yeah, we assume that they are in lockstep in every regard, but wouldn't it actually be historically kind of logical that the U.K. would say, well, you know what, in fact in this case, you can't necessarily have your way as, you know, whatever the DOD and military wants to dictate in this. And I just think I have a lot of other feelings about this. I think a lot of it is old news, and that's another thing that I really wanted to get in. And I say that because the in the interest of the DOD, like, pursuing this and prosecuting this and holding this up as an example is actually, if they do that, I think it's a huge, huge betrayal, and using it in the political context, that timing it in the way that you're suggesting they may be,
I think is a disservice, in fact, because overall the emphasis on security and getting cooperation and stuff is it's their systems and their procedures and things that, in fact, you pointed out, Private Manning was responsible for and has already been punished over and over again for. And aside from whatever technical thing we want to hang on to that was a crossing some line, the danger of the actual person at fault is actually, I think, very, very small because of the advanced age, the health issues, and I've said this many times before, the scrutiny. If he goes free, is he just going, like, I would be fascinated if I felt he was such a terrible threat, I'd be fascinated what he did. If we let him loose, yeah, let's follow him, let's see what he does. This big bad character we're so scared of. So that just tells me, like, this is being set up, and I frankly think we're kind of playing into it. I'm not gonna be negative about it, but I think we should stop being so kind of sanguine or just accepting it, you know, acquiescing, just like being okay with it. It's torture. It's insane. It's old news. The person that, if they do hold this up just to try to scare future campaigners and journalists, I mean, that's it. It's over. I mean, that's the betrayal. I have nothing but a middle finger for that, especially being involved in reporting on tech and reporting on hacking, the very thing the DoD fucked up. So I have a lot of feelings about this stupid trash that is honestly a total diversion to where our priorities actually should be as a society. Anyway, I just wanted to get that little comment in there.
All right. Any reaction to Kyle Slutz there? Nobody?
All kinds of visceral reaction.
Go ahead. Say something.
Oh, go ahead, Rob.
Go ahead, Rob. You had your hand.
I did. Excuse me. One thing I wanted to make sure we mention in the time we have left is the Streisand effect of it all as regards the Appen case. And I want to particularly mention our friends at Distributed Denial of Secrets, which posted the Reuters story under a new project they have called the Greenhouse Project, which is building on previous efforts to create what they call a warming effect to reverse the chilling effects of censorship. And so you can find this this article on how an Indian startup hacked the world. It's backed up on Distributed Denial of Secrets. That's ddosecrets.com, and just search for Appen Uncensored in their search tool, and you'll find it.
Hey,
and of course, it's in other places around as well. And it is, we do love our Streisand effect on this program, don't we?
Do we have a phone call? We've had a phone call all this time. I'm terribly sorry. Good evening, you're on off hook overtime.
Good evening, gang. This is Tim in Connecticut. How are you doing?
Hey, Tim. Sorry, we put you on hold for so long.
We
forgot.
The conversation was just so enthralling. I just couldn't see any way to. I wasn't even going to interrupt because the reason why I called was just to ask if. Your situation with Gmail, getting the word of hope out to everybody, had improved. I just came over it as I was making my hotel reservations today, but I didn't know. I know you were having a problem with Gmail and all that. I just was wondering if that had improved.
Well, you know, it's there's no comparison between the kinds of struggles that people and entities are going through around the world and our problems with Gmail. But
right.
It is interesting because we kind of feel dissuaded from saying anything in that forum. And just to catch people up, we've posted several announcements about our upcoming Hackers on Planet Earth conference in July. Nearly every announcement we have sent out has been labeled as spam by Gmail. And considering half of the people who have signed up for our announcement mailing list are on Gmail, it's made it very hard to reach those people. And, you know, we can't mail them and say, we're trying to reach you, because whatever we mail is labeled as spam. If we mention the conference, for some reason, that's labeled as spam. We're told that, if you send out another announcement, that it's too similar to an announcement before that they labeled as spam. So if you can send out an announcement about the conference that doesn't mention the conference or say the word hacker in it or anything else, then maybe it'll get through. You know, this kind of control over speech is something that we're becoming all too familiar with. Whether it's a government, a court, or a gigantic email provider, the end result is the same, where you're basically intimidated into just not saying anything. So in answer to your question, we haven't sent anything else out since the last time. We are going to have some announcements. And by the way, one of those announcements is going to involve a special deal with a hotel. So hopefully it's not better than the deal you made today, but we have been busy organizing some things, and we are getting all kinds of speaker submissions and workshop submissions, villages, all sorts of things. So it's building up to be a great conference. And hopefully we can let people
know that I cancel up to like 2 days before the conference.
So okay.
If something better came down the line, I could always rebook.
There are going to be a lot of options. So people can stay in places for under $100 a night, which is great for New York City.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so there will be a lot of announcements. But if you are on Gmail, keep checking that spam folder, because they tend to send a lot of things there. It's really terrible. And check the spam folder anyway, because guaranteed there's going to be mail there that you don't want in there that for some reason they put there.
Okay, I'll get off the phone to let everybody else call in.
Okay, good hearing from you.
Have a good one, guys.
Take
great
care.
One.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And again, that phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK, talking about all kinds of speech being manipulated, controlled. We're talking about injustice of one sort or another, whether it's in the UK or in India or in the United States. These things just don't seem to ever end. While we get that call, let me just ask Cooper, when did you guys first hear about this this case out of India? How did you find out what was happening with Reuters?
Yeah, so we heard about this through sort of the usual channels. You know, we have a lot of friends who are journalists. We talk to a lot of journalists and things like that. So we heard about this from a few different sources, and it was really concerning to me for a number of reasons. Right, there's the free speech angle. There's the I do a lot of work on cyber mercenaries. I've done work before that's touched on Appen and Beltrox, which is sort of the successor to one of the earlier iterations of Appen. But most of all, I was concerned that if this was successful, that there would be, that this would be a tactic that other oligarchs, other cyber mercenaries, other, horrible people all around the world could use to silence reporting, right? I think that this was bad guys can be clever, right? And I hate that dichotomy, bad guys, good guys. But, people we don't like can also be clever, right? And I think that this was a really clever legal tactic to try to silence this story. Now, of course, I think we are in the midst of watching it horribly backfire thanks to the Streisand effect. But I think sort of the interesting thing we've taken away from this is that the Streisand effect doesn't happen by itself, right? Just because the Reuters story, if the Reuters story had been taken down and nobody had written about it, nobody would have known about it, right? Like nobody would have ever, we wouldn't be talking about it right now. There wouldn't be all these stories about it, right? There wouldn't be other large podcasts talking about it, right? Along with many others, this was not, at all just EFF. The Freedom of the Press Foundation had a hand in this. Organizations like Tucker and Muckrock and a bunch of other news organizations, right, Wired, all had a hand in amplifying this story and amplifying the story about the story and the story about the takedowns, right? And that really got the Streisand effect going. But if you want to, if you want to see the Streisand effect get going, you have to sort of kickstart it, right? That's been the big lesson for me, is that we really did have to push this along, right, and build up a lot of interest in this case before the ball started rolling. And now the ball is rolling on its own, right? So ever since the Behind the Bastards episode got taken down off of iHeartRadio's official channels, for example, so the subreddit of the Behind the Bastards show has been very active. They have archived the show for people to find on the subreddit. They've been busy spreading rumors that Kare likes to engage in copulation with lizards just to try to ruin his Google juice and piss him off. Right? Of course, these claims are untrue, completely untrue, and Reddit is what's saying this, not me.
Well, you don't know they're
untrue. Not 2600 Enterprises.
But you don't know they're, we don't know they're true. We don't know they're untrue or true.
I'm just trying to keep you from getting sued, but nonetheless, I think it's really interesting, right? And that this whole, you know, ever since the episode got taken down from Behind the Bastards, it's sort of taken on a life of its own, right? And people mm-hmm. who wouldn't have otherwise heard about it have really started engaging with it and learning more about this, right? So I think that that's a really interesting example of the Streisand effect taking off, but it took a lot of work to get it there, right? But I'm glad because I hope that the fact that this has taken off so much, right, and now suddenly the Wikipedia entries for Appen and for Kare are a lot more extensive than they were a couple weeks ago, right, and they go a lot more into the details that were exposed in the Reuters story,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, I hope that this will dissuade other oligarchs, other cyber mercenaries from trying to engage in this particular tactic, right? But if it doesn't, right, I know that there is a large group of organizations that are going to go to the mat to make sure the Streisand effect happens. But I hope that, you know, all of the listeners and everybody involved here will also take that lesson to heart and remember, you know, tell your friends, tell your coworkers, tell your families, right? Like get the word out there to groups and communities that don't necessarily care about this, right? Or that do care about this, people about it, right? Tell your church group, right? Like this is, mm-hmm. that's how the Streisand effect happens.
And in the end, it's always about individual people like us that have the real power here. Now, you know, this podcast that was taken down was on iHeartRadio. They're a big company. They caved to this pressure pretty readily, whereas we run our own setup and it's a lot more difficult to convince us. So when you do things on your own, when you run your own email server, when you run your own website, you're not beholden to all these ties that some massive company might have and reasons why they don't care so much about your speech. In the end, you have to be the one protecting your speech, and you'll find a lot of people will back you up on that. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, you do have a phone call. Hi, it's Bobcat.
Hey, Bobcat. How are you doing?
All right. Since you were mentioning India, I thought I'd call in and tell you or remind you about the WIPO decision, the World Intellectual Property Organization decision from 23 years ago. About the domain Bodacious Tatas. I'm sure you remember that.
Wasn't that a Cult of the Dead Cow thing?
No, it was some porn site. But, okay, Bodacious Tatas, you can go look Urban Dictionary, see what it means. It means large, full-figured breasts. But the Tata group in India, the Tata family is like the Murdochs or the Walton family in the United States. Billionaires, they have conglomerates, they build ships, they build cars, they build all kinds of things. But they sued to take over the domain name Bodacious Tatas because it was too close to being like Tata.com. And so the World Intellectual Property Organization, it's a United Nations-run organization that decides whether you can have a domain name, handed Bodacious Tatas over back to Tata.com. And it was like the small guy against the big guy, the very, very small guy who had no money against the billion-dollar industry. So for 23 years, Tata.com has had registered BodaciousTatas.com. They let it expire.
Oh, dear.
So if you want to go right now, you can get it for $9.98.
Wait, no one's taken it?
No one's taken it. I just checked a minute ago.
Well, Bobcat, why don't you take it?
I don't have any bodacious tatas to post.
Yeah, but you could have the domain, and then you could basically, issue your terms and oh wow, it's an opportunity.
I'm buying that right now.
I think
yeah.
Okay. The guy who owned it 20 years ago got sued. I'm not going to be sued by a large Indian conglomerate. That would be a bad idea.
I think we're all going to get sued by a large Indian conglomerate. I think that's the theme of tonight. Yeah, Alex, go ahead.
I'm seeing it as registered, though, from 2023, unless I'm spelling Tata's wrong.
Well, are you spelling bodacious right? Or wait, yeah, that's not part of it.
Is it .com or .in?
.com. If you look for bodacious hyphen Tata's.
Hyphen. Okay, gotcha. I see. Yeah, let's take a look right now. Let's see. Yeah, you're right. It does not exist.
So I thought Rob would probably be the person who'd be best suited.
Why would you think Rob was the person to go for this?
He's the funniest person in the room. That's why.
Wow, Rob's the funniest person in the room. He could be talking about the room he's in right now, which, he's in there with Gila, which, I think
Rob is in
there. Gila's pretty funny when she wants to be.
Thank you.
But looks aren't everything, get it? That's it?
Actually, your ass kicked by somebody. I'm not sure who.
Somebody's got to, right? Yep.
Well, I mean, Alex, you're looking up bodacious tatas on your work computer, so, I mean, you're already in trouble, dude.
We spent entirely too much time on this, so anything else that you wish to share with us?
Oh, yes, I do have a question for Alex. If a police officer is sleeping on the job, is that theft of honest services?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah, we'd have a lot of claims.
Okay, if you go to x.com/bobkitten, you will see my pinned tweet. I'm starting to release videos of my local police sleeping on the job.
Wait, this happens on a regular basis?
Oh,
I've seen them thousands of times, and I mean thousands of times, sleeping behind the church down the street from my house.
Why would a cop want to sleep behind a church?
Because it's a huge empty parking lot and it's dark over there.
Are you sure they're sleeping or just maybe, lying in wait for somebody who thinks they're sleeping?
x.com/bobkitten. Look at the pinned tweet. There's the video. That's the first video I took of a sleeping police officer. He's sleeping with his chair all the way back. He's dozed out. I shine a light in his car, in his face. Doesn't move.
Wait, hold on a second. You go up to a police car and you shine a flashlight into their face and...
I am not easily intimidated.
Uh-huh.
It's scary, I will admit that.
It's scary, yeah. It's scary. Any other things you want to share with us? It's really been a hell ride so far.
I will save it for a couple of weeks from now.
Okay, fair enough.
While you're still on the phone, I want to let you know that I am now the proud owner of BodaciousTatas.com.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Just like that. History is finished.
Yep. Why not?
You don't become a religious domain name collector like me without being signed into the DNS at all times.
That's right. Yep.
Well, I'm glad we accomplished something tonight.
Also, by the way, if you search for App in India, the first hit you get are articles from Reuters saying we had to take down this article because of an Indian court decision.
Mm-hmm.
Reuters folded. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, that's what we were talking about.
On that point, I think that there's a really interesting thread here, which is that the larger the organization, the more quickly they fold, right? And contrary to what I was saying before about, like, slap suits are more intimidating for smaller organizations, which they are, but the larger an organization is, the more they have to defend, right? So, like, iHeartRadio folds immediately, right? Reuters folds immediately, right? But, like, littler organizations, TechDirt, MuckRock, right? You guys have been more willing to take the risk and actually fight this. So, I think that there's You know, obviously I'm against monopolies. We've been talking about how monopolies are bad here, but I think that there, you know, there's another advantage of having a lot of little organizations is that we do have a larger appetite for risk, right? We just have less money to back that up legally. But, mm-hmm. you know, like you were saying, we protect us, right? We gotta protect ourselves. We gotta protect our communities and keep fighting for each other.
The individual,
that's all we have.
Individual is stronger than the monopoly, I think.
The individual has less to lose because we're all broke.
Well, there's that. There's that. Hey, thanks for your call. Be well.
All right. Bye.
And, Rob, you have something before we go.
Yeah, I just I actually wanted to mention to Bobcat, I hope he's still listening, that I like his video, but I couldn't help but notice the absence of shots of things like maybe the license plate on the car or the badge number or anything really fun like that.
Are you suggesting this might be a prop? Of one sort or another? Fake cop with a fake car?
No, I'm suggesting maybe the direction of the next film in the series could use a little extra...
Shamery?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's hope he doesn't get himself in a situation he can't readily get out of. Don't encourage people to go up to cop cars and shine lights at them. That probably isn't going to end well. All right, Cooper, I want to thank you so much for sticking on with us for the hour and for all you do down at EFF. It's incredible what you guys are able to share with the world and the fights that you willingly engage in and the victories, the many victories that you have had.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I've been reading 2600 and listening to Off the Hook since I was a wayward teenager, latchkey kid on the forums and on reading text files. So it's really, really great to be here. If people want to keep in touch with me, I'm Cooper Q, letter Q, not to be confused with the weirdo cult, on the various social medias. You can find me on all of them. I think on Mastodon, I'm at infosec.exchange. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on the shitty bird site. And all the rest of them. And then I also want to, you know, in addition to being involved with EFF, I'm involved with an organization called Open Archive that has an app that allows people to record human rights violations or anything else in real time, encrypt those, get them timestamped, and securely upload them to the cloud or to a server you control so that you can keep records of human rights violations and, you know, perhaps even get them introduced in court. I also do, so check them out, open-archive.org. I also do some work with an organization called Lucy Parsons Labs that's doing really amazing things. They have a database of the faces of every Chicago police officer along with their badge numbers so that if you happen to be in Chicago and you get beaten by the cops, you can sort of go through a mugshot lineup and find out which cop beat the crap out of you. That was just their first project. They're doing really, really awesome stuff. So definitely go check them out as well.
Holy crap. Wow, that's a lot of cool stuff you're involved in. You just described a whole bunch of shows that we can do just talking about those, or maybe articles in the magazine, or certainly talks at Hope, because I think every single one of those people want to hear more about.
I loosely work with these organizations. I'm taking no credit for this work. All this work is being done by other really, really amazing people who are working super hard, and I just want to shout them out as friends of mine.
Well, if you can spread the word about it, you're definitely doing the work as well. So thank you for that, and we look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you.
All right, and thanks everybody for listening. OTH@2600.com is our email address, so please write to us if you have any thoughts or questions. I believe, Rob, there are 2600 meetings next Friday, not the one coming up, but since we're not on the air next week, maybe you want to remind people about those, even though I just did?
Correct. The 1st of March is the first Friday of March, and so 2600 meetings happen all over the world. Go to 2600.com/meetings. Here in New York City, you could go to nyc2600.net, or you could go to you could go to 2600.com/meetings to start one near you. All the info is there.
Yes, click on guidelines, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about how to start a meeting in your area. All right, for Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime, this is Emmanuel. Have a good night. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.